Welcome to the College Football Bros. I'm Michael Newman.
And I'm Trey Newman.
All right. We have completed the ACC, the 17 coaches in the ACC, ranked them. Now we have 16 coaches to get to in the Big 12. This one, I would say, was a lot more difficult to rank than the ACC. There were a few coaches that were really tough to rank, which, of course, we will get to. But Trey, who was last? We both agreed on this one.
Well, and I completely agree with your sentiment on this list. Like, it was a juggling act for a lot of these coaches to where I placed them. But number 16, I think, was easy. Kenny Dillingham, Arizona State, still just totally unproven as a head coach. His first year was 3-9, but to his credit, he had to deal with a lot of the off the field issues and drama around the program. He's the offensive whiz, but they were last in the Pac-12 in some of the key offensive categories. Hasn't quite elevated the recruiting yet, but you know, he's still transfer heavy. Curious to see how he is able to kind of navigate now the transition to the Big 12. That'll kind of dictate if he can move up at all in this list.
Okay, number 15 is Brent Brennan at Arizona. I was a little bit higher on him, but I understand how he ended up here because, you know, at San Jose State, that's an extremely tough place to win, and he's made 3 bowl games in the past 4 years there. So that's the positive. Like, that's a really good job there, but it is in the Mountain West, and you're taking a jump up into a power conference here, and sometimes that works out, sometimes it doesn't. So he's still unproven in that sense.
Yep. That's a good point. Maybe, we've got number 14, Dave Aranda, Baylor, and he has one of the hottest seats in the country this year. He had that incredible 2021 season, won 12 games, won the Big 12 title over Oklahoma State, that amazing goal line stand, but he's 11-23 in his 3 other seasons, including 3-9 last year. The offense was dreadful. He brought in a new offensive coordinator, Spavital. Hopefully that gets them back in the right direction. But, you know, as of right now, it looks pretty bleak.
Amazing how quickly things can change. That's just nuts. Another reason.
He was like the hottest name.
I know.
For other jobs.
Yeah. I mean, I was praying for him at USC. Like, it's just, it's crazy. Yeah. How fast things can change, which is why, you know, I would say the biggest difference for me when we've been ranking these coaches every year for, I don't know, 5 years running, something like that. And I would say 5 years ago, I maybe was more willing to take a gamble on a coach that just had one good year, or, oh, wow, year 2, they took a big jump. Let's go all in. It's examples like this where I'm kind of a little bit more cautious now and slightly valuing more a longer track record. Number 13, this one, I'm just a hater. Kalani Sitake, BYU. I just think BYU has been an easy place to win for decades now. They just always seem to be pretty good. So, I just kind of look at Kalani Sitake a little bit like Pat Narduzzi, but a little worse. Like, yeah, they had a great kind of, in Sitake's case, it was 2020 and 2021, but those just kind of look like the outliers. He's also had a couple of bad seasons, including this past year was a little rough. I know they were going up to the Big 12, but I'm also not optimistic about 2024. I just think he inherited such a consistent and strong program from Bronco Mendenhall. The fact that it hasn't been that consistent under him and is a little bit of a negative for me. So maybe the resume, he should be a couple slots higher, but for whatever reason, I'm just not a believer.
That's fair. And my biggest, I guess the parallel that I could make or the comparison would be like, he's the David Shaw to Jim Harbaugh after it's not to that level, of course, but he was able to just kind of like, if he had to start the program, what you're saying is you don't think he could have maybe had the success he's had.
Exactly.
Even though it hasn't been consistent.
Like, that 2020 year especially is the big outlier, and they had just a completely garbage schedule. I mean, granted, they dominated it, but it was just a weird year, and they had a completely garbage schedule, and maybe just things came together. They had Zach Wilson, and it might have just been a magical year.
Yeah, and to your they didn't have the best first year in the Big 12, so it could be slipping, but it is surprising when you look back at his record. It's surprising. Like, didn't think it would be as good as it was, but to your credit, yeah, it's not the strongest schedule. All right, number 12, Scott Satterfield of Cincinnati. Now, I don't think he's a bad coach, but he just hasn't been able to have the success at the Power 5 level or now Power 4 level. He did great at App State, won 3 Sun Belt titles, went to Louisville. The fans there didn't love him. Only had 2 winning seasons, barely in his 4 there. Then had a just dreadful 3-9 season at Cincy last year. And then the knock that you could point to is, you know, you have Jeff Brohm go in and have immediate success at Louisville. It's not the best picture for him. But I guess if you're making excuses for Satterfield, you know, it's tough following a legend like Fickle at Cincinnati, having to build a new roster while they also transition to a new league, the Big 12. So now it's just a matter of, he's got to show some life so that they don't stay in the cellar. Cause going 1-8 in conference last season was not a good look.
No. Okay. Number 11. This is a coach that very tough to rank, Deion Sanders at Colorado. Obviously he did a great job at Jackson State, so he gets a little bit of credit there. And Colorado year one, like, maybe record-wise, it didn't turn out amazing, though it was better than the previous year. You know, he went 4-8, and power rankings-wise, like, they took a huge jump. They were the worst team in Power 5 the year before, and then last year they were, you know, maybe 40 slots better in terms of SP Plus or FPI, something in that range. So, got a lot better. He attracted some good transfers, and, you know, he'll get a few really good high school recruits. But the concern is he building a sustainable program? Like, he's really, I think the big thing going around now is that he doesn't do in-home visits. So that's kind of a, like, he just doesn't seem like he's trying super hard at the high school level in particular to recruit. So, that would be a knock, but I mean, so far so good results wise at the FCS level. And then in year one.
Yep. He's tough. We'll see how this year shakes out. Number 10, Neil Brown, West Virginia. Got off the hot seat last year, put together a 9-win season that included a bowl victory. You know, he had a great run as the Troy head coach, but up until last year, really couldn't get over the hump at West Virginia. Still, you know, he's only 31-29 in his 5 years there. Needs to prove that, you know, last year wasn't an aberration, and he can get the Mountaineers to consistently be competitive in the league.
Okay, number 9, we have a coach that we just discussed briefly before we started the episode, Joey McGuire at Texas Tech. You had mentioned he just kind of wanted to rank him a little bit higher, and I agree with you. Like, I'm very bullish on him and optimistic, and maybe you could have him a couple slots higher, but there is kind of maybe a rock solid top 5 that he would need to prove more to get there. But I mean, he's done, I think, an underrated job in 2 years at Texas Tech. They got immediately better. And it's only partially shown up in the record because he's had some tough schedules, tougher than, you know, his predecessor, Matt Wells. But the team's been top 35 in ESPN's efficiency metric each of his first 2 years, which is a big improvement from what he inherited. He recruits really well, seems to make, you know, has made some logical coordinator hires. Like, everything just seems to be trending in a positive direction for Texas Tech. So, you know, 9, when you hear the top 8 coaches here, you're going to be like, well, okay, 9's not so bad.
Yeah, that's fair. Number 8, Gus Malzahn, Central Florida. I personally kind of struggle with Gus. I loved him in his early years at Auburn, had the exciting offense, was churning out great teams. The last few years there were a bit disappointing. And then at UCF, he hasn't done awful, but he also hasn't done great. Like Frost and Heupel had previously just had some really strong runs at UCF. And now he's 24-16 there. The way I look at that, it's good, not great. First year in the Big 12 last year, 6-7. Finished 9th. You know, the good thing for him is Central Florida, they're at least recruiting towards the top of the conference, so that counts for something for me. And he also was able to bring in a quarterback like KJ Jefferson this year, is a good sign, at least you'd think.
Yep. Okay, number 7, Willie Fritz, in his first year at Houston. This is the 6th school he's been a head coach at, and the previous 5 have all been very successful. So when you have that many stops, even albeit at lower levels, like, you're a pretty dang good head coach. You went 12-2 and 11-2 the last 2 years at Tulane, which is insane given how bad of a program they've been. So he definitely overachieved there, given that, you know, their history. And he just has a very high floor. I don't know. Well, I don't know what his ceiling is, you know, at the highest level here. But I mean, I don't know. Those past 2 years at Tulane are pretty dang good.
Yep. Number six, Sonny Dykes, TCU. even with his incredible national championship run, this is pretty much where I think he kind of belongs. He's above average in the league, but you know, I wouldn't put him at the top, at least for now. His teams, they're always going to have strong offenses. They're going to have 7-8 wins, but he's going to sprinkle in, you know, a random 10-win year when things kind of align. 5-7 last year, but you know, they did deal with some injuries, had to play some youth. I do look at this year as kind of important for him and TCU. They're recruiting near the top of the conference, but need to get some good results on the field to kind of keep the momentum that he built from that dream season.
Yeah, I think they're going to bounce back, and I'm optimistic about him. I think that's just going to be kind of a blip on the radar. Well, it's two blips, that national championship season and then the 5-7 season. So maybe they'll settle in somewhere in between. Number five, we have Matt Campbell at Iowa State, and I actually had him a couple slots higher. I might have had him as high as two or three.
I must have brought him down. Like we were talking about, two through six here are really hard.
Yeah. There's definitely, these next few are all very close, but Iowa State is arguably the worst power conference football program, and he's made six bowl games in the last 7 years there, winning record in Big 12 play six of the last 7 years. And he also did a good job at Toledo, so it's not just one stop. And I just think he's a really good head coach, had some bad luck in close games a couple years ago and kind of lost a lot of his luster in the public eye and has no longer been brought up for some of those big head coaching jobs. But I don't think that's fair. And I think he's kind of rebounding and proving, like, he overachieves.
Yeah. And last year, like the beginning of the season, they started the season really poor. And then they, as they got into conference play, they improved, and looks like they're trending for 2024 to have a good year. I'm with you. I maybe he should be a spot or two higher. All right. Number four, Chris Klieman, Kansas State, had an insane 5-year run at North Dakota State, winning four national championships. And he's kind of validated it by having some success at Kansas State. I look at him like he's gotten the most out of his teams, really develops the talent that he's had. He won the Big 12 a couple years ago, beating that TCU team we talked about. That's obviously a big accomplishment at Kansas State to win the Big 12. Back-to-back top 20 finishes. They play a tough brand, usually good defense. And now I'm kind of curious to see them with, you know, some promise at quarterback, Avery Johnson. It'll be interesting to see that transition.
Yeah. Yeah. And these, we brought up Matt Campbell, Chris Klieman. You could reasonably argue both of those guys for number one. And I think this top five, like we said, I just think it's just so rock solid. And we're getting to number three, another guy who has an argument for number one, Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State. 18 straight years of making a bowl game, which is just insane for a program that's not recruiting, you know, top 10, top 15 classes, not even close. So pretty incredible. He's finished in the top 26 of the past 9 seasons. Last year I thought they'd struggle after what they Hand lost in transfers too. In the offseason, and it got off to a little bit of a rough start, but they ended up winning 10 games. I don't think they were as good as their record would indicate, but then I say that they bring a ton back this upcoming year, so they might win 10 games again. I mean, who knows? I wouldn't bet on it, but they're going to be pretty good.
Yep. Just when you count them out, man, he comes back.
Yeah.
All right. Number two, Lance Leipold, Kansas. He's the miracle worker. You know, no one thought Kansas could be relevant, or at least, you know, as quickly as he's done it. And he's gotten to two bowl games in his first 3 years. They had 9 wins last season. And they've had to juggle, we've talked about this before with Coach Elnicki, they've had to juggle some quarterbacks because of injuries and whatnot. Doesn't matter. It's plug and play with his system. his last 3 years at Buffalo were amazing as well, winning two division titles, went to two bowl games, like, you know, unprecedented things there. And then obviously his dominant run at Wisconsin Whitewater before that wasn't a fluke. And his teams just are, they're fun to watch. And it's amazing to see what he's done so far.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Number one, we have a newcomer to the conference, Kyle Whittingham at Utah. Just a long track record at Utah of being a very solid program, well coached. They've made a jump in like the past 5 years. They made two Rose Bowls. They've been in the playoff hunt. They're just always good, even though they don't recruit super well. So there you go. There you have it. That is our Big 12 rankings. Trey, what do you think the biggest disagreement people will have? We didn't talk about that for the ACC. I'm not sure that we did mention after the pod when we stopped recording that maybe for the ACC, maybe people will think Pat Narduzzi at 10 is a bit too low, though. He's coming off a bad season, so maybe people won't feel too strongly. This one was a lot tougher to rank, so maybe there is a guy who people will have a disagreement with.
I don't know. Maybe the biggest name, of course, is Dion. Maybe someone would have him more towards the middle or something.
Yeah, possibly. Let's see. Who else? Maybe Mike Gundy. It was my fault that he ended up third. Maybe he should just be second. That's such a great track record at the Power Conference level. I mean, you could argue number one as well, obviously, but
yeah.
But I don't know. It's
like we said, it's so grasping the top five. It's like, you know, shuffled up, and I wouldn't be too mad either way.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we did good, Michael.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I'm glad. Let us know what you think on Twitter at CFB Bros, or of course, if you're a member of our Patreon, we'll be discussing it in the Discord server. So thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next time when we cover the Big Ten. So we'll see you then.